At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Johnny Rhodes from Restaurant Indigo and Broham Fine Soul Food coming up in a little bit. But first, I am joined by my co-hosts, plural, this week. Let me introduce them individually. He is a passionate advocate for the Houston food scene. Matt Harris, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
She is the proprietor of SwankyMaven.com, Felice Sloan, welcome.
Hey. Just got to back it up a little bit. I need you to work on my intro and bring me back in with a little more pizzazz like you gave Matt. One more time, please. Come on. I believe in you.
She is a master of all things health, beauty, food, wine, and good times. She is the Swanky Maven herself. We follow her at Swanky Maven. Felice Sloan, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, yes, I'm good. Thank you for that intro.
All right. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Burger Chon has closed their location in Greenway Plaza. This is bad news for me because I really like Burger Chon. It is bad news for what few office workers remain in Greenway Plaza, but this is more see you later than goodbye forever because they are still working on their location in the Galleria area at 5353 West Alabama, which is not coincidentally where Gao Media, the company that owns Culture Map, has their offices. So Matt, let me just throw this to you. You're a Burger Chon super fan. What are your thoughts on the closing?
Well, true story. I am a super fan. In terms of places that I have frequented the most that have closed, this one is certainly at the top.
Yeah, this one stings a bit. They had a lengthy note on both their Instagram and then on their website that said their business was off as much as 80% because they counted on the dedicated office population of Greenway Plaza to support the restaurant. Obviously, people generally are not working in offices right now because of COVID-19. So they really felt like they had no choice but to close. Felice, had you ever been to Burger Chon? I'm not sure.
I've been there once, but you know, for me, it's hard to get over there. Most of the time I'm in the field out. So yeah, I feel bad just because they have a great burger. It's a good company. And I hate to see people just have to close down, but it wasn't one of my burger spots.
Right. So, you know, we lost Bernie's Burger Bus at the end of May. Burger Chon has closed at least for a period of several months until the new restaurant opens in 2021. It's left me a little bit without like a default burger to satisfy a burger craving. Felice, let me just ask you, what is your current burger go-to right now?
La Lucha, the Pharmacy Burger, is always a go-to burger. And that's like the replacement for, because I was a Bernie's girl. So that Pharmacy Burger, it's just everything for me. You know, it's the perfect, it's just kind of like a flat burger. The ratio of bread to meat works. So that's one of my go-tos for sure.
Matt, how about you? What are you thinking? Where will you get your burgers now that you can't go to Burger Chon?
Well, that's Felice has identified a fantastic burger at La Lucha, and that's certainly one of them. I feel like I'm going to have a little burger sorrows for a bit with the loss of Burger Chon, but La Lucha Pharmacy Burger. You know, Relish has a really fantastic cheeseburger that they do. Had a cheeseburger, thin patty style, from Brandon Silva at Wooster's Garden this weekend that was delicious and a little out of off the beaten path, maybe. The cheeseburger at Tiny's Number 5 over in West U.
Okay,
Check it out.
I've not had the cheeseburger at Tiny's. That's good to know. I got to say, I think my burger go-to, at least for right now, is going to be the cheeseburger in Paradise at Brazil. Two thin patties of 44 Farms beef, bacon, cheddar, house-made jalapeno sauce served on a kind of sweet and squishy potato bun, Shake Shack style. $13, comes with fries, maybe not quite as inexpensive as Burger Chon. No tots, sadly, but I ate that burger again this weekend just to sort of verify how much I like it. And it is a greasy in a good way, gooey, and the jalapeno sauce, it's not super spicy, but it does have enough heat to kind of get your lips smacking. It's a really tasty burger, and it's one I think I'm going to be eating more of now that I can't go to Burger John.
I like it.
And then just to sort of put a pin on this, Chef Willett Fang, who owns Burger John with his wife Diane, will be available for private chef's dinners and that sort of thing, at least in the short term. I don't know if anyone listening to this is looking for that, but just a reminder that Willett was one of the opening cooks at Oxheart. He's worked in Singapore, so he's highly qualified. He makes a lot more than burgers. And if I were having like a sushi party or something like that, Willett might be my guy to cut up a bunch of raw fish and show you how that's all done.
Unmuting here. Technical difficulties. I was going to follow up on, Felice alluded to it as well. You know, they make a great burger, but they're even better people. They have a great reputation in the community, and just really glad that this is not goodbye.
Absolutely.
Okay, sorry for the interruption. More of What's Eric Eating is coming up here in a second. But first, this is super important. Babe Wine has officially made its way to Texas. Yep, that's right. It's the cute, delicious, take-anywhere bubbly wine in a can that pairs well with literally everything. Even your grandma's iconic cornbread. Thanks, Grandma. Find our Grigio, Rosé, and red wines at HEB, Specs, Kroger, Walmart, and Target. You're welcome. Now back to the show.
Rosé and cornbread. Who would have thought?
All right, let us move on to topic number two. I want to go a little bit off the board here. Usually our topics are based on articles that I have written for Culture Map. This is not. This is something that's been circulating on social media. Chris Shepherd had a post on his Instagram feed last week where a would-be influencer sent him a direct message and said, please offer us complimentary food items that we can post and write about on our blog. He said, friendly reminder to not be asking independent restaurants for free food ever, but especially right now, restaurants have the tiniest profit margins and are hanging on by a thread. Millions of people are without jobs. Millions more are about to be without jobs. This is extremely tone deaf. Be better. Support restaurants by dining in, ordering to go, or getting food delivered. Support local. So essentially what Chris is saying is, you know, you can take your quote unquote exposure and shove it. If you want to support my restaurant, come and spend money with me. This inspired a predictable outcry from a whole bunch of our local influencers who point out that, yes, they do get some free food occasionally, but their posts about restaurants can really help them grow. Felice, I have a wide variety of thoughts on this, but since you kind of straddle that influencer world, I wanted to bring you in and kind of get your take on both the ask and then the response from Chris.
Yeah, I have definitely some opinions on. I've talked to some influencers and some restaurants have been circulating that as well, because, you know, I think they all, I won't say they all, the people that have circulated, they kind of feel like Chris feels. And I see it both ways. I think the nature of the message that they sent to Chris was definitely tacky. I think in the manner that they reached out, how they sent it, it was unacceptable. I think I agree. That's not a way I would have approached a restaurant before pandemic and during pandemic. So that's one thing. I think they could have reached out. One of the things I've never done when I was doing this and been doing it, free food is not anything that I really care about. I'm like, I was doing this before. I pay for most of my food, even though I do great tastings. So if there's a new restaurant, I want to go to the restaurant. I would go to the restaurant and then maybe reach out and to them and say, hey, I enjoyed the food. I was there, blah, blah, blah. Start a conversation like that and go from there. You know, there's a way you do that. Also to Chris's point that right now is probably not the time. Again, if you're wanting to approach a restaurant, definitely patronize the business. Maybe even when you're there, talk to the manager or whatever and develop a partnership. On the other side of it, though, on the influencer side, yeah, I think to take a general statement and say, you know, pretty much to your point, yeah, thank you, but we don't really need your influence, all that. There's a lot of restaurants that have been successful and are known because of influencers going there, putting them on the map. And to the big restaurants that don't need it now, you know, you have a PR budget that you're spending money on, that you're giving somebody the money. So to take that approach that, you know, that it's tone deaf, everybody doesn't have your budget. And I just say this to Chris, just saying it in general, but everyone doesn't have a big budget and all influencers aren't going down that road of looking just for free food. So, you know, I see it both ways.
Well, right. So you made some of the points that I want to make, which is essentially like not all, there are certainly restaurants that benefit from being featured on certain Instagram accounts. I mean, I read, you know, I follow a few dozen of them, but certainly, you know, Hangry Houstonian, Houston Hotspots, Houston's Got Spice, Julie Jules, Eating with Catherine. I mean, just off the top of my head, I know those are some Food Delicious. I mean, those are some that I follow and really look to for, you know, knowledge about parts of Houston that maybe aren't plugged into the media apparatus, don't pay for professional PR, and really rely on influencers to kind of get the word out about what they're up to. Right. Felice, you and I never would have gone to Proper Rose Garden and had a delicious afternoon of tea and snacks if I hadn't seen that blow up on my Instagram feed with a whole bunch of influencers. So there's certainly a role for them in this world. And if they get paid or they get free food or they get whatever, that's really between them and the restaurants. I don't rely on them for their opinions or their expertise, right? I'm not looking to them for insight into the quality of a restaurant. I'm really just looking for sort of pictures and experience. And then I'll make my own decision about whether that appeals to me or not, whether right. That's a place I want to go. And then once I go, obviously I'll form my own opinion. But there is something particularly arrogant and outrageous about approaching Chris Shepherd, or, you know, Morgan Weber posted this for Cultivare, and thinking like, oh yeah, these like very famous restaurants need the exposure that my account, which Morgan posted the full name of the account. I'm not going to share it. I don't want to direct any more negativity to them than they probably already received. But, you know, this account had about 4,500 followers. It's like, you are not offering anything of value to these restaurants. And I traded a bunch of DMs with some influencers myself, because one of them posted like, oh, well, if you could get, you know, an article on Eater or the Houston Chronicle in exchange for free food, you would make that choice every time. Well, they might, except that's not how that works. Right. We don't trade.
Right. Right?
An editorial article,
not a pay to play. Exactly.
Right. An editorial article in Culture Map or anywhere else is a judgment by the people who work at that publication. The content about that restaurant will be interesting to the readers. Right. Like, we're going to talk about Blue Dorn here in a little bit. And I wrote two or three articles about Bluedorn before it opened. I had Aaron Bluedorn on this podcast. That was done with no expectation, no requirement other than, I think, the fact that a chef who worked at Cafe Ballou opening a restaurant in Houston is really exciting.
It's a big deal. It's exciting.
Right. Right. It's knowing that that kind of stuff is happening is why people read Culture Map, and it's why I get paid a salary.
Right.
So.
Right. It's newsworthy. Know. And that's what people, I think that's very important that you said that. That's what people, they miss that, because we are in this whole influencer culture now that people think, oh, that's what that looks like. I'm like, there's still traditional ways, right? Like, that's editorial, that's newsworthy, that has nothing to do with the after, right? You wrote these way before you even tasted any of the food. Like, this is an right. exciting thing that's happening for the city. Yeah.
Right. And yes, you and I did go to Bluedorn as their guests through their public relations firm. We're going to talk about that meal here coming up very shortly. But if they had said to us, look, budgets are tight, you know, we'll make your reservation, but you're on your own, we still would have gone, because fundamentally, you and I both love restaurants. We're excited about new restaurants as they open.
Right.
And if I had to pay for that meal, I would have been happy to do so. I will go back in the future and I will pay for those meals. You know, it was a funny thing. Chris was like, you know, support my restaurant by buying food from there. Well, my mother and I ordered takeout from UB Preserve a couple of weeks ago, right? I've got that receipt, you know, dinner for two, because I was kind of feeling myself and was like, oh, lobster lo mein. Well, you know, with the tip, tax tip, it was about $140. It was a little spendy on dinner for two that came in boxes, but it was well worth it. The food was extremely delicious, and I was happy to do it. You know, that's not something that I expense. That's not something the Culture Map pays for. You know, that's Mom and Eric treating themselves to a nice dinner. So, yes, I do think there's a role for influencers. I do think influencers maybe overestimate their role sometimes and don't understand necessarily kind of how they maybe don't always see the big picture. But I do, you know, I do respect their role in this world. I obviously follow them because I see value in it. But, you know your role, influencers. Right. Like
time and you know, place. But you know what? In the defense of, I don't know the account. Yeah, I'm always for someone. You know, hey, you aim big. So they said, we're going to go for it. They probably could have worded it a little bit differently. But, hey, I commend them for going for it. Say,
right. You know, nothing you venture, give them, nothing gain.
Nothing venture, nothing gain. Man, they went for it. They said, we're going for this, and we're going to shoot high.
All right. Matt, well, do you have anything you want to add to this?
In normal times, okay, maybe. I mean, I really struggle to see how, you know, just a blind DM pitch is any sort of nothing venture, nothing gained. It's also extremely tone deaf. Someone that's putting themselves in front of the struggle of restaurants and bars right now like that, to me, is that's just a red line. And to countenance that behavior because that's the industry you're in isn't really that much better.
Yeah, that was the one thing is I wanted to see the influencers just be a little bit more explicit about, yes, we provide value to certain kinds of restaurants that want to work with us, but what this person did was wrong, right?
Yeah.
This is not what we do. This is not what we're about. I wanted the denunciation to be a little bit more, the condemnation to be a little bit more explicit.
I agree.
Fee, anything before we wrap this up?
No, you know what? I'm glad that we had the opportunity to address this, right? Because normally you're not really controversial, and I think that's a kind of controversial topic. So I'm glad that you went there, and because a lot of people don't know how that looks, you know, like, oh, what's wrong with doing that, or what's, you know, on both sides of it though, right? Like on both sides. Because there are, so I commend you for actually having the conversation.
Well, thank you for that. That does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Our restaurants of the week are brought to you by Cutwater Spirits. Cutwater Spirits takes their award-winning real spirits, uses them to make great cocktails, which they then put into cans, so you can easily take them where no cocktail has gone before, even if that's just your own backyard in summer 2020. Cutwater offers a convenient way to enjoy your favorite bar-quality cocktail outside of the bar setting. They have a wide variety of over 17 delicious canned cocktails and 20 bottled spirits, so there is something for everyone. The Vodka Mule, Tequila Margarita, Grapefruit Vodka Soda, and Tequila Soda are just a few of their fan favorites. You can find Cutwater locally at Specs, Total Wine, Goody Goody, and more. Visit cutwaterspirits.com for more information. So Matt and Felice, for our restaurant of the week, as I've already said, we want to talk about Blue Dorn. This is the new restaurant at 807 Taft, formerly the space that housed the Passive Provisions. Aaron Blue Dorn has been a guest on the show. We've talked about this restaurant quite a bit. He was the executive chef at Cafe Blue in New York for about 5 years. That means his boss was Daniel Ballou, arguably one of the most famous French chefs in America. It's not, I think, even in any exaggeration to say this is the most significant restaurant to open in Houston this year, because we just don't typically see chefs with Aaron's resume and experience open restaurants in Houston. Matt, would you agree with that?
Well, that's maybe a little bit loaded for me to agree with, but it is unique to have chefs come from out of town to Houston.
Right. Felice, let's dive into the decor a little bit. I mean, this restaurant looked nothing like the Passive Provisions did.
Oh, yeah. When I walked in the space, I mean, just to know where things used to be, that's the only thing. You know, you're like, okay, I found myself walking in going, that used to be here. Trying to remember, though, right? Because it just was like a complete... transformed it. It's immaculate, like the way it looks, like the transformation, aesthetically pleasing in every way. It was like I was not in Houston anymore, and definitely not in Houston during the pandemic. It just felt like I was transformed somewhere else at a different time. It was beautiful. It was a place where I wanted to be. Like if I showed a picture or saw someone's picture, I would be like, ooh, where is that? Like, I want to be in that space. It's nice.
Yeah. Just to be explicit, right. They took down the wall that separated the Provisions dining room from the Past dining room. So it's a big open room and it's got mirrors on the walls, so it looks even bigger. Open kitchen, the kind of chef's counter pizza station that used to be part of Provisions is now a raw bar. There are these, you know, gorgeous blue velvet banquettes that kind of line the walls and the middle of the room. You know, it's all kind of polished wood tables, wood chairs. It's very comfortable, Matt. I don't know. What did you think about the way the restaurant looks?
Yeah, the beautiful is a really good word for it. And just the subtle touches of brass, the lighting is really well done. The bar is really well done. They did a great job. I mean, very inviting, comfortable place to eat.
Matt, have you seen it in the daytime? I'm sure you have. I want to see it in the daytime. Like what? Because we saw it at night. It was a little bit sexy, kind of not like in a dark sexy kind of way, right? Where it's very lit, but not too what, not too lit with the brightness. So in the daytime, I wonder how it looks. I want to see that.
Yeah, it looks like they lengthened the bar too, and the patio has been stretched out a little bit. So it's, you know, I will say it's the first restaurant where, you know, it seems like kind of the COVID protections have been taken in the mind of the design, right? That they kind of had enough time before they opened it to do that. So I felt very comfortable there in the sense that there was plenty of room between the tables. And then they have some plexiglass partitions and things separating things out, but it still felt lively and getting that balance right between, I feel safe and comfortable dining here but there's still like an energy in the room. I think it's really been something that's tricky for restaurants to do. So I thought more than anything, maybe that was what impressed me the most about the design.
Yeah. The open kitchen, the lighting, the color scheme, those bink cats, just those little subtle touches.
All right. Let's talk about the food. Felice, what would you say was your favorite thing maybe that you ate at our meal there?
Oh gosh. It was probably between the kale and the black rice and the short rib ravioli for me. I'm going back and forth. I'm like, well, maybe the oysters. I don't know, but I'm going to settle on the quail with the black rice. Like that was just it was just a perfect bite. It was funny because Matt saw the picture and Matt was like, that quail, right? Matt, remember Matt was, I was like, dude, I was thinking about it the next day. It was superb.
Right. Stuffed quail breast served with black, like roasted bacon wrapped. Yeah. Just a really impressive presentation, a very delicious dish. Matt, how about you? What were maybe one or two that stood out for you?
The quail is definitely one of them, and had it twice so far and is just delicious. Some high level cooking executed very well. So the brassicas we really enjoyed, and the wood roasted oysters were fantastic.
Yeah, are those the ones that are kind of the Rockefeller style with the
exactly?
That's an impressive dish. Felice and I had the foie gras terrine, just a classic smooth served with like peach preserves and these like lemony biscuits. I thought that was really delicious. And that those short rib ravioli, I mean, just a, thin pasta, the right texture. I mean, the short rib was rich and delicious. Just everything about that dish really came together for me. And that burger, I mean, it seems silly, but a properly medium rare cheeseburger, house grind, with these cooked down sauteed onions, if you're gonna have a $19 hamburger, it's gotta be really, really good. And that certainly is.
When Eric saw the burger, this is so funny. They put the burger down and it's a burger. I mean, they cut it, but you didn't see it. I literally took the fork and knife and parted it so I could take a picture. Eric was like, OMG, do you see that burger? we all looked, it was perfect. Like, wow, that's a burger. And that was before we even tasted it. It just looked like, you need to eat me. Like, I need that right now in my mouth.
And then Matt, is there anything you've tried that you, I won't say didn't like, but maybe liked less?
No. For a restaurant that's just opening, to find its footing that quickly was really impressive. Service was on point. It just was some very great dining experience.
Yeah, I will say that there was one that came up just a little bit short for me. It was that tamale pie. It's got that kind of sweet cornbread over the braised short rib. And the cornbread was maybe a little bit too sweet for me. Didn't really have any kind of a tamale flavor or texture, at least that I sort of expected. I would say it might suit other people's tastes. I mean, I've seen it on social media, so I know that that's true, but it's not something I would personally order again.
Well, I had the exact opposite experience. It was absolutely delicious. We ordered quite a bit of food that made it home for leftovers, and I had it for breakfast the next morning. I will say I'm looking forward to when they're doing brunch because it was even better in the morning.
Maybe it was an off night.
That's where we
thing.
Went wrong. We didn't get it as we didn't take it home and have it for breakfast.
Daddy, you got to ask me these things. I do believe though that a lobster pie is going on the menu in its stead. So,
oh yeah, I saw that lobster pie on social media last night, or maybe Saturday night, and it looked fantastic. So I'll go back and order lobster pie happily.
Yes, lobster pot pie.
Right. And I think one of the other things I really like about Bluedorn is that they're kind of playing around with some dishes that we don't see here. Lobster pot pie comes to mind. Chiappino, the seafood stew. You know, we got the chance to try the Chiappino, and it's just, you know, this kind of rich, satisfying tomato broth. All of the seafood was really nicely cooked. And then they finish it with just a touch of sherry that kind of ties the whole thing together. Really enjoyed that. And of course, can't talk about this restaurant without talking about Baked Alaska, which Aaron stopped by the table. He's like, it's flaming ice cream cake, right? So, you know, two kinds of ice cream in a layer of meringue. I honestly don't think I've ever had Baked Alaska before. I can't remember having it before. But what a wonderful introduction to it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the signature dessert there. Anytime you want to put flame and meringue together, I'm in.
You're there.
I'm there.
And they're even doing the molten chocolate cake, which is such a cliche that it was made fun of in the movie Chef, and that movie's got to be, you know, damn near 10 years old already. But, you know, when it's done right, when the pastry is a little bit crispy, when the chocolate is rich and gooey and really melted, it's a reminder that dessert used to be kind of revolutionary and is still really delicious. It's just, it's sort of half-assed so often,
yes. But
you know, they're not messing around at Bluedorn, I guess it's kind of the way things are going. And then, you know, the other thing, Felice, that we should maybe talk about is you and I had wine pairings with Jack Mason, who's currently kind of working there while he's furloughed from Pappas Brothers, trading off with their sommelier Molly. And, you know, they're both kind of playing around with all these different Italian wines to pair with the food. And, you know, it's a really deep bench of stuff that they've got on that wine list. And
it is. It was such a treat.
Very, very well.
Yeah, it was such a treat. I just remember saying, man, it was really... It was the dinner I didn't know I needed. And I think one of the questions you asked, is this one of the most significant and most important restaurants of 2020? For me, it definitely is right now. You know, somebody can come and steal that position, but it just, if you're a food lover, it's just a restaurant that they just, the service, the experience, the food, the wine, all of it just comes together, and it just makes you, for that time that you're there, and that's why people go out a lot of times to, you know, treat themselves, treat yourself to that. It was just, it just lifted my spirits. It made me feel like a year ago, you know. It just, I was in the moment, enjoying dinner with the folks that were there, enjoying food and wine, and that's all I was thinking about. And it just made my day. And then when the chef came out, what a nice, I mean, he was very nice and appreciative and just was a genuinely nice and appreciative host. So it was a marvelous experience for me.
Absolutely. Matt, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, that's really well put. I like that sort of metaphor of transporting you to a happier place.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I think this is certainly the most significant new restaurant to open in Houston this year. Not that there aren't other delicious new restaurants, not that there haven't been other really fine meals. Matt, you and I had one at Mucifer. Mary Clarkson and I had one at Turner's. You know, there's kind of smaller places certainly that we've had some good food this year, but not just for its deliciousness, but also for its atmosphere and its service and its beverage program and just the whole experience. I don't think I've had a better overall time than Felice and I did at Bluedorn, and I can't wait to go back. And I know that this is a very expensive restaurant. And as I said earlier in the show, we were their guests, the guests of their public relations firm. But this is definitely splurge territory for most people. But I will uh, I I will make that splurge. I will allocate money so that I can go back to Blue Dorn on my own dime very happily.
Yes. It reminds me of the the Houston, it's worth it motto.
Yeah.
Blue Dorn. Yeah. It's worth it.
It's worth it.
It is.
All right. That does it for our restaurants of the week. Matt Harris, thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Felice Sloan, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on with Maddie. I never did that. So that was a treat today.
I was just about to say, good to be with you, Felice, always.
All right. I will be right back with Johnny Rhodes. Before I introduce my guest this week, just a quick heads up. There are a few audio issues from Johnny's end. He's coming to us live from his Food Fight Farms project, which is about an hour outside of Houston. So the connection comes out a couple of times. Just we apologize for that. And still think it's a really great conversation with Johnny. And I hope you enjoy it. I'm joined this week by the chef owner of Restaurant Indigo and the proprietor of Broham Fine Soul Food and Grocery, Johnny Rhodes. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for doing this. It feels like so much has happened for you since the last time you were on the show. I mean, I never would have guessed that the first time I met you was at your apartment in Northeast Houston. You were previewing ideas that would sort of eventually lead you down the road to Indigo. You know, I never would have guessed the James Beard nomination. I never would have guessed the Texas Monthly feature article. I never would have guessed all the national acclaim. I mean, how do you feel? I mean, it's got to feel pretty good to have achieved at least so much notoriety in such a relatively short period of time.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. I mean, I never would have guessed any of those things either, if I'm being honest with you. Those things weren't necessarily on my radar at the time. I mean, of course, I was aware of them and I knew about them, but I had no idea how to obtain them. I was more so just trying to get on my feet and, being in this junction now and having all those things happen. When you're going through it, you really don't really appreciate it. But, you know, now that this is kind of coming down to our last year as a restaurant, I'm kind of looking back at all of it. And it was just a whirlwind, and I appreciate it now a whole lot more. And it's just been great.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that decision. I mean, you announced a couple of months ago that this is going to be the last year for Indigo. I know that surprised a lot of people. I mean, what kind of led you down the road to that decision?
I mean, longevity. I mean, you don't see very many, if any, restaurants lasting, 50, 60, 75 years, things like that. And me having, children and a family, that's the type of lineage that I want to be able to establish for myself and for my family. And never having access to that, I want to be an example of different ways of being able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you did is you've been talking about opening a grocery store, for a long time, and the pandemic kind of pushed you to maybe move on those plans a little faster than you intended. So maybe just talk a little bit about kind of what Broham is and kind of what inspired you to go in that direction.
I mean, yeah, COVID happening, I was like, man, I mean, I sure can't believe the pivot and, what we did and how we did it. But, I mean, it was something that was necessary. We closed on March 9th, which is like a little under 10 days, a little over 10 days, before everything took place and, the city shutting down and stuff like that. And it was just kind of nerve-wracking knowing that the restaurant was going to be closed. And then at that same time, we had other things that were just going on, and we wanted to be able to pivot and be there for support for our community long-term and short-term. And in doing so, we thought about, why not just go ahead and try the grocery store? And we ran into so many hiccups, so many bumps and bruises. It was really rough you know, having a grocery store and not having any experience doing it or even how to do it. But our team is like very vigilant and very, you know, adaptable, and we made it happen.
Yeah. What were maybe some of the specific challenges you ran into, and how did you overcome them?
I mean, the grocery store business is very different from the restaurant business. It's based upon inventory. Restaurants are more so about making quick money and selling things quickly. Versus the grocery store, you need to have things on hand at all times. But then also you operate off of things with a short shelf life. But Indigo is a restaurant that was built off of reserves already. So it being built like that made it a little bit easier to transition for us into the grocery store because we already had such a large inventory of reserves. But then we ran into the issue of packaging, right? When COVID happened, there was a lot of things we couldn't get packaging to us. That was a struggle, packaging things and learning how to package things properly, labeling, barcodes, all these different things are things that are very QRF codes. All these things are very important to get into a grocery store. We just didn't have the experience or the knowledge at the time.
So, I mean, what's the response been like to the grocery store? I mean, you're in a part of the city where there really isn't much access to fresh food. I mean, I got to feel like, are people excited about it or how's that gone?
Yeah, I mean, people really enjoyed it. Our product, we're putting out really great products. Everyone was enjoying the products that they got from us. Of course, we ran into some different pricing issues to where, some people couldn't afford different things. But that's also part of, us having a farm and building our efforts to move towards sustainability. And in that, you see people also, a lot of people are living off of food stamps and WIC and SNAP and different other food benefits, both state and federal. And we didn't have the system or the infrastructure to accept those items. So we had to create a system to be able to accept those items so that way we can, broadcast to a larger genre of people.
So are you now able to take SNAP and WIC and some of these other programs?
Yeah, by the time we reopen the grocery store, we will be able to accept WIC and food stamps.
And then you mentioned the farm. I would talk about kind of the relationship between the farm and the grocery store, because I think we're all sort of familiar with the idea that a very small group of restaurants, have access to a farm or have their own farm, right? Rosie Cannonball has access to a farm, or maybe most prominently Blue Hill at Stone Barns, right? Dan Barber's restaurant in New York, very well known for its farm. I can't think of many grocery stores that have direct access to a farm.
Right. I mean, that's based off our entire concept as a grocery store is controlling and completing that supply chain. Imagine going into a grocery store and there's something that's moldy or there's something that's wrong, right? They just take it off the shelf and replace it with something else. But how do you as a consumer not know that that's not going to happen again? With it being us, completely in-house and completely self-sufficient, we can look at troubleshooting those issues so that way you can have that safety blanket going that it's never going to happen again, or you might show up to the grocery store and the farmer, the person that actually grows the food, might be delivering it that day. So if you have different questions about things, also the hospitality level that we're going to provide as a grocery store. So many people go into grocery stores unsure of what it is they want to cook or even knowing how to prepare it. We plan on having people on the floor guiding people to help them be able to make those decisions based on what it is that they're looking to do.
Right. Well, and not just, what do I do with this vegetable or this meat item or whatever, but you see people like, in a traditional grocery store, like, knocking on melons or smelling things to try to figure out if they're fresh or not. There's not always a lot of guidance, right, about what these ingredients are, how they're grown. I mean, so from a service perspective, I think you've got a real opportunity to educate people and kind of help them understand what the potential of these different ingredients is.
Right. And that's the idea. When we control the entire supply chain, what it is, when you see most grocery stores lose out on money, where they have those products that are fresh or are going to be on such a short shelf life, as a chef and as a, preserver and things like such, can then take those same products that are on a short shelf life and then turn around and put it right back on our same shelves but as a different product.
So just tell me a little bit about kind of the structure of the farm. I mean, like, how far away from your restaurant or the grocery store is it? I mean, how big is it? You know, when do you expect it to be producing?
So, I mean, we're a little bit about an hour and some change outside of the city. We're sitting on a little over 6 acres. And I'm actually here right now. We're, you know, burning the last of the trees and the underbrush that needs to be burned down. And then we'll be hopefully planting by Halloween once it cools down a little bit. I was hoping to plant this month, but I don't think that we'll be able to. But I believe we'll be able to plant by Halloween. And us planting by Halloween will mean we'll be able to harvest.
Yeah, if you plant by Halloween, you'll be able to harvest what in February or March or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll be able to even harvest a few things in December.
Oh, that's great. I mean, do you, I don't know, how much do you know about farming? Are you working with a farmer? Like, how does the mechanics of the crop growing actually come together?
No, that's right now we don't have a farmer. I'm doing everything myself right now. I'm, you know, doing quite a bit of juggling. I really appreciate project managing. That's something I really enjoy is, you know, people being from earlier on when Indigo first opened up, going from doing everything myself, I'll delegate the work, and then just trying to be a teacher and be very focused on, you know, what it is for the end result and then building towards that. Right now, the farm is headed in that direction to where eventually we'll have a farmer. But for right now, I'm just holding down the fort.
So you're Farmer Johnny.
Farmer Johnny, Chef Johnny, Engineer Johnny, Builder Johnny.
What do you need to do? You said you've burned off some of the land. What are the other things that you have to do to get ready to the point where you can plant?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're using slash and burn tech right now. So we'll till our beds and do some different, so our bed, get our beds ready so we can start planting. We also got fresh water in. So I would say the biggest thing for us is right now is probably getting our irrigation done, and then we can bring in dirt and soil, and we'll start making our beds and planting by Halloween.
And then, is it an organic farm or what about that?
I try not to use that. I'll just say natural. We'll be composting and, you know, using natural and organic, you know, food ways to do all these things. But we're going to use a lot of ancient food ways from, you know, we'll do some modern techniques like compost tea. We'll add ashes. We'll do tons of composting. You know, just a lot. This is my first time taking on a full-fledged farm like this. So if I'm being honest with you, I plan on learning a lot and absorbing a lot of information and then processing it and then using it. My information isn't, you know, overly limited, but I'm sure I'm more than sure that there's so many people that know much more than me, and I'm just listening to all of them and, you know, applying it as they teach me.
And then what do you think you're going to grow?
Oh, I know. We're going to grow quite a bit, actually. So I'm dedicating at least 1.25 acres to nothing but fruit. So we're going to have our entire fruit forest with fruit trees. And then we have another entire 1.25 acres dedicated to, you know, crops. We'll be looking at corn, potatoes, carrots, collard greens, onions, garlics, all those different beets, all those different, you know, mushrooms, et cetera. All of those different products. The common household grocery products you see. We'll have some specialty items out there, but won't go too wild.
And then I guess talk a little bit about kind of what you long term, like, what's your vision for Broham Fine Soul Food? Because I mean, the Indigo space is so small. I mean, do you think that that's kind of enough room for what you want to do, or do you have plans for a bigger space?
I mean, that's Indigo isn't where the grocery store is going to be located at. Indigo is just its own space for our for another project, and a project involving the grocery store. But I anticipate, or my goal is, in the next 10 years, I'll be 30 in October. So by the time I'm 40, and in the course of 10 years, the goal is to get 1,000 acres and 25 stores.
Wow.
That's the goal.
To cover, I mean, that's going to take you beyond Houston, I assume.
100%.
Okay. What's kind of inspired you to move in this direction, kind of away from a restaurant and towards more direct-to-consumer kind of grocery items?
That was kind of always the plan. Indigo as a concept, I told everybody, was a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone for, you know, more sustainability, and then a stepping stone for, you know, something that can be a project long-term. Everybody from our community doesn't have the availability or the affordability to pay $125. Right. So I use my customer base and my platform and my message and everything to build that up so that way I can create something much larger. When I very first opened up, where I didn't have the capitalism or the mindset or even the understanding to be able to take on a project of the magnitude that I'm doing now.
Yeah. I mean, what sort of prepared you or when did you kind of know that you were ready to take this next step?
I mean, I didn't. I still don't. I don't think there's things. I think when there's the next step, when the next step is in, you know, in the framework for any career or anything that you're doing, I don't think you ever know when you're ready to take the next step. I made so many mistakes doing this. It makes me like, man, did I make the right step? But that's a part of it. You know, it's not the adversity that's the problem. It's how you respond to it that makes the difference.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, you know, after the death of George Floyd and the protests, I mean, we're in a tremendous moment of people maybe talking about racial justice in this country in a way that they probably haven't since the civil rights movement. I mean, what do you see as kind of your role in that, or how has that kind of affected maybe your goals?
I would say it hasn't affected my goals. These are things that have been going on for eons and eons since the inception of, you know, this country. And I'm really at a point to where I don't have much to give as far as the conversation. I think what needs to be done, what has to be done, a lot of us are very much aware of. But I think, you know, we give too much into the idea of democracy and not doing it ourselves. You know, I think change is something that has to change. Change and progress is daily, right? If you can't touch your toes today, you can't ask somebody else to come help you stretch so that you can touch your toes tomorrow. You got to continuously every day try to bend down and touch your toes. And for me, my idea is us as a society, we have to try to solve those issues without always leaning and looking for the government to do those things. I've never understood that. And, you know, I think the less power we give them, the less control they have over us. And I think if people that didn't like each other or don't believe in each other, whatever the case might be, actually sat down and talked about it and tried to, you know, resolve it and move forward, we can look at those things. But we keep, on both sides, keep believing in politicians who want to drive us further apart.
So you're kind of stepping back from all that. You're just going to do your thing and focus on the changes you could affect.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's nothing my hands can't do. But I do believe that, you know, while everybody else is, you know, having conversation, I'd rather be back doing some of the work, you know, being frontline and making those things happen. There are people out there that are doing things across this world that are so incredible that don't involve any conversation, and they're not getting enough support. And I don't want to be, you know, a person that, you know, looks up and when the world is all coming down and my kids ask me, what did I do when the shit hit the fan? I want to tell them that I was in the thick of it.
Have you seen changes in your neighborhood, even in the 3 years that you've been there?
Sure. I see a lot. I mean, I see changes every day. I mean, it's human evolution, you know, getting to see people, you know, in our community. Like, I have guys that work on my farm, that work in my restaurant, that's from the neighborhood, that's from the community. And now they're talking about, you know, like, oh, I can't wait for me to buy me some land, or I want to buy some land. This was something that was, you know, never an idea before, because in our community, where we come from, you know, owning land isn't something that you were brought up to believe that was for you, you know, and then to have them be able to come out and see it and see the change and see the work, you know, they saw that space as an abandoned 30-year-old building when we stepped into it. And now it's a beautiful, luxurious space. You know, we did that in our community. We didn't have to leave and go find somewhere else to be. We did that right there in our backyard. And then we went outside of our backyard and created something even bigger and better for us. And the idea is to inspire for us to do more. You know, I'm only one man, I'm only one person. But if I can get more and more people to believe in themselves, to do more for themselves and for their communities, there's nothing that can stop us as a society from being better.
Do you have goals for the restaurant now that it's your last year? I mean, is there anything specific you want to achieve before you close the doors?
I planned on keeping the menu the same for the entire year, but the chef and me won't let me do it. So I'm gonna in the spring, we're gonna change the menu to the pescatarian side so we can do the seafood. I've always wanted to go up in courses and do even more intricate things. So we're definitely gonna do that for the pescatarian, go up in courses, and then we have that menu change as well. I really want to have my domino tournament when we close. Man, we couldn't do it this year, and I was heartbroken.
Yeah, I remember for the 1 year anniversary party, you were out there with everybody mixing it up, talking shit and throwing throwing bones.
So hey, listen, Mr. King, the guy who won last year, he's been coming by the restaurant like every day for like the past 3 months. He'd be asking us if we got his rent money ready because he won so much money last year. He paid his rent, so he just been coming by. He came by like May and June, which is like, I'm just making sure y'all gonna have my rent money for August ready. So you know, people in the neighborhood, that was something that was great to have everybody together, you know, playing games and, you know, just enjoying good food, and then having people that's not from the community, you know, intertwined to that. It opened up the door for, you know, understanding, and that's what it's all about. You know, everybody being in the same space and in the same place together and enjoying themselves.
How's it been going since you reopened? I mean, do you feel comfortable? Do the diners feel comfortable? I mean, it's a tricky environment for everybody right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is very true. It's definitely, I mean, I feel comfortable. Everybody else has been pretty comfortable. We keep everybody seated pretty far apart. And, you know, just having the table set up the way it is, our server isn't like trying to get in between people, trying to walk behind people, serving you from behind. They serve you from the front. So the contact is already even more limited. And then it being such a small space, it's not, you know, 40, 20, it's not even 20 people, you know, but it's not, you know, it's a very small amount of people. And everybody has been so respectful. This year so far, it's been like, this is what I imagined it being like. It almost kind of sucks that we're closing because, like, now I feel like we finally got it figured out.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, you could stick around for. I don't think anybody else would be mad if you stuck around for an extra 6 months or even a year.
I would love to, but you know, with everything that's going on, it's very important, you know, to me and for my family and my kids and my community as well, to be able to create something that can last much longer than my lifetime. Because I can get off of this phone and hit the freeway and be on my way there, and all of this could go up in smoke. So, you know, I want to make sure that I'm moving diligently and getting things done so that way we can create some change that can last hundreds of years and affect our community and our people much longer than my lifetime.
So do you think you're done with restaurants entirely and you'll just be you'll be focused on Broham for the rest of your career, or how do you see that shaking out?
I mean, Broham and Broham is a legacy, lifelong project. You know, that's not something that I'm ever going to be done with. I'm sure at some point my daughter, my son, my kids would, you know, take over it. But I mean, restaurants, I don't think I'm just going to be done with it forever. But I have to take care of this first before I can, you know, look back and you know, doing restaurant work.
Yeah, I mean, I remember your Instagram post when you announced that you were closing. I guess I just never really realized that there was no like outside investors, that no one had kind of taken you up on the opportunity to participate in this. Cause I mean, I remember going to that pop-up you did during Black Restaurant Week, and there were all these, you know, well, just judging by the cars they drove and very affluent people in the room. And I thought surely at least a few of them would have seen the potential and maybe wanted to invest with you.
I mean, I did too. I mean, I felt like that a lot of times, you know, but there's no crying over spoiled milk. You know, the freight train has to keep going, and I bet they're kicking themselves now.
Yeah. yeah, they might, maybe they'll subscribe to your CSA or help you find additional locations for Broham as you grow that.
Nah, I'd rather not give them any of my money. I'm really focusing on like really like less about money and really more about like, you know, just giving back. You know, money comes and goes as the wind blows. You know, people look up and they don't really realize that they've spent and made so much money in a year, but it's just how we spend it, you know, how we use it. I prefer to use it towards, you know, food and towards the betterment of people having food. Because if everybody doesn't have food, you know, people don't understand the cognition between crime and food, right? When you have young people that commit small crimes for stealing, you know, small amounts of money, they're not going to spend that money on something luxurious. That money is recycling the drive-through line at McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's. You know, so I look at it like if I can provide a more sound way for, you know, all these people to eat and it be affordable and also provide ways for them to have access to it, you know, you kill multiple birds with one stone, not even two, multiple.
So what does success look like for you maybe over the next 5 years? I mean, you know, a built out farm, 3 locations of Broham. I mean, how are you sort of measuring your goals now?
Honestly, I'm not. Until it's done, you know, nothing is done, if that makes sense. You know, if I look up and, you know, we have, you know, 3 stores and 25 acres, you know, that's great, but we're not job complete yet, you know? So that's why I measure the success as it's finishing out, you know, what I started.
Well, Johnny, I appreciate it. I mean, it's been really something watching you kind of set the world on fire, and I wish you nothing but success in the future.
Oh man, I appreciate that, man. You're day one. You came and sat in my apartment at 8. So, you know, I appreciate that, man. And then ever since, this has been a whirlwind, and it's been fun to be able to do all this. Feel very fortunate.
All right. Well, we will obviously we will continue to support you at Indigo, and we will everybody who's listening to this podcast, when you reopen Broham, I'll be sure and let people know, and we'll be there for biscuits and bacon and preserves and whatever else you want to sell us.
Oh yeah, we'll have so much in abundance for you, man. I can't wait for y'all to have access to it.
All right. Well, give us the website and everything for Indigo, and kind of let people know what your status is so that they can come meet with you one more time.
So you can check us out at on our Instagram is going to be restaurant_IndigoHTX. Or if you want to check us out online, it's going to be htxindigo.com. Reservations are only 10 people inside of the restaurant at a time. We're 125 tasting menu, and we're going to be looking at reopening the grocery store here pretty soon. You can keep up with all the updates for Broham Fine Soul Food and Groceries at Broham_groceries. And you'll see all of the information about what we're doing with the farm and the grocery store and possibilities and availabilities to donate.
Johnny, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.